chapter 12, we were introduced back to the radiant woman, arrayed in the sun with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars upon her brow. She's about to give birth unto a child. Standing before her was the devil, the great red dragon, who were ready to devour the child when it should be born. The child was born, caught up under God in his throne, and now he was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. The devil was defeated in this. And following that, we have a description of the great conflict between Michael, the archangel, and the dragon, which I think was simply symbolic of the great conflict, spiritual conflict, that had been going on from the Garden of Eden down to the present. Because it is said, when the devil was cast down, now is come the kingdom and the salvation and the glory, a power, rather, of our God and the authority of his Son. For the authority of the Son came after his defeat of Satan on the cross when he was raised from the dead. The devil then went to pursue the woman in the wilderness, where God and the Lamb, or the Son, rather, had prepared a place for her. And there she was for 1260 days. That is a period of conflict, we pointed out last Sunday night, a period of adversity and persecution and those things. Well, that introduced us to the woman who is Zion, who is the daughter of Zion of the Old Testament, and we pointed that out, and the man-child and the dragon. In chapter 13, we're introduced to two other personages, or forces, rather. These were the beast that came up out of the sea and the beast that came up out of the earth. Well, we went to the Old Testament and pointed out that these symbolized the great Roman power, great Roman Empire that would persecute the church, try to destroy it. The other, the one out of the ground or the earth, represented paganism or false religion. So these are the two allies of the devil in his fight against God and the kingdom of God. He's using in these two force, misused force. Now remember that we read that the powers that be are ordained of God. God ordained that civil government should exist. So the fact that this was a civil power is not a thing that makes it wrong. It was a misuse of power that God apportioned unto or gave unto the political government. And the other one then was paganism or false religion. Now, he has a third ally that we'll mention in a week or two, and that was the harlot of chapter 17 and 18. She symbolizes lust. Everything that's lustful and seductive and enticing. Well, these are the three allies of the devil. Now, in our lesson tonight, we're introduced to God's allies. These allies are the triumphant son on Mount Zion, the 144,000 that follow him whithersoever he goes, and righteous judgments, the judgments of God against wickedness. He warns them in this. So our 14th chapter, which we are studying tonight, falls rather into three divisions. First of all, we see the Lamb on the Mount Zion with 144,000. Then second, we have three angels that announce warnings unto the wicked world, warning them to fear God and to keep his commandments. And this is followed then by one on a white cloud that reaps and gathers, and the other is a judgment by the judgment upon wickedness. So these, I don't know why you call them two judgments. The cloud usually symbolizes judgment. But I think really the first one is Christ gathering the harvest through his messengers as he sends them out preaching the gospel. The other is the judgment that God pronounces upon those who do not give heed unto the gospel, do not heed that particular thing. He rules in that realm with a rod of iron, and that's demonstrated in this. So tonight we want to look at these three different parts of this passage, of this chapter, and try to determine what they symbolize and represent. So we begin, and I saw. Now, there are three different things that are introduced here. Back in 13th chapter, I saw. Here again in this one, and I saw. So John is saying, this is what I saw as God was revealing these things unto me. Now, as I've said many times, these are pictures that God presents that teach a lesson. It's a lesson in picture rather than simply in words. Now, as we begin, "And I saw and behold the Lamb standing on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, as the voice of many waters, as the voice of a great thunder. And the voice which I heard was as the voice of harpers harping with their harps. And they sing, as it were, a new song before the throne, and before the four living creatures, and the elders. And no man could learn the song, save the 144,000, even they that had been purchased out of the earth." We'll leave it there. Come back to that in a moment. Now, first of all, I want to note this matter of Mount Zion. Now, Zion in the Old Testament had been, according to 1 Samuel, it was David's stronghold. David conquered Zion. Now, Zion was a southeast hill of the city of Jerusalem. It had been possessed by the Jebusites. Now, David conquered the Jebusites, took the city, and made Zion his stronghold. Later on, the temple was built here on Mount Zion, or just a little bit north of really the southern extremity of it. This became then the dwelling place of God among his people. So the people now thought of Mount Zion as the dwelling place of God in their midst. Then the idea further developed that this then was a stronghold or place of protection for the people of God, because God was there. So it was David's stronghold, and then it became the place of the temple, God's dwelling place among them, and they thought of it then as the place where they would be protected by God, because Zion could not be taken because God was there. But when, as I pointed out this morning in one of my lessons, the 10 o'clock, the early lesson, from the book of Ezekiel, that God departed or took his departure from the temple. So God left it, and when he left it, why, then they were destroyed by the Babylonians. That's the point that Ezekiel is making in his book, his letter there. Right, so now then, this is what it meant to them, and many other things you could look at there. But now, let's look at two or three of the prophecies as it looked to the New Testament. In Psalm 2 and verse 7, Jehovah says, "And yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. Ask of me, and I'll give you the nations for thine inheritance." Right, we turn to Hebrews, the second chapter, and that's quoted there. Part of that is quoted, applying it to Christ. So we know that that's messianic. In spite of the effort of the nations to break the bond between Jehovah and his anointed, God said, "And yet I've set my king upon my holy hill of Zion." Then in the 110th Psalm, in the first two or three verses, Jehovah said unto my Lord, "Sit thou at my right hand till I make thine enemies thy footstool." Says the rod of thy strength shall go forth out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies. Right? And then thy people offer themselves willingly in the day of thy power. So here from Mount Zion, Christ will sit on the right hand of God. The rod of his strength will go forth from Zion that in his rule over the nations. Well, that psalm is quoted so many times in the New Testament. We know that that's messianic in its nature. In Isaiah, the second chapter, verses 2 to 4, Isaiah said, "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it, and many people shall go and say, Come, let's go up to the mount of Jehovah, the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. And I get it, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem." Well, now this is speaking then of the establishment of God's rule from Mount Zion, which began on the day of Pentecost. We often say marks the establishment of the church. Well, that's true. That's when it began. But really what was established was the rule of God through this king who ruled on Mount Zion, and the law would go forth from Jerusalem, from Zion rather, and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. And God would sit and judge between many people, and they'd beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Now all of these prophecies, and I could mention many others, are looking now unto what we have in the New Testament. And what I'm trying to establish is that this Christ on Mount Zion is not the final heavenly scene. It's what's going on now. All right, we read then in Hebrews the 12th chapter, And beginning with verse 22, you have not come unto a mount that smokes and quakes, verse 18, for you have come unto Mount Zion, and unto the heaven of Jerusalem, unto the city of the living God, unto an innumerable host of angels, and the general assembly, or the church rather, of the firstborn, who are enrolled in heaven, and unto Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and unto the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better than that of Abel. So we have come, in Hebrews 12, we've come unto the Mount Zion of the prophecies that I just quoted from the Old Testament. Now, that what John sees here is, what he beholds in his vision is Christ on this Mount Zion and the 144,000 together with him. So now this is, we've had back in the 7th chapter, we saw the souls beneath the altar that had been slain for the Word of God. In the 7th chapter, we saw these before the throne of God, praising God that particular time, the great multitude that came out of the great tribulation. Now then we see them here in another picture as on Mount Zion with the Lamb who is leading them. Right, now that would lead to the next question. Who then is the 144,000? Who are these? Well, we had those introduced back in the 7th chapter. I want to note a couple of verses there that indicate that these are the same as the 144,000 back there. Now, in the first few verses of chapter 7, after this I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that no wind should blow on the earth or on the sea or upon any tree. And we described that when we went through it. And I saw another angel ascend from the sun rising, having the seal of the living God. And he, now know what he had, the seal of the living God. And he cried with a great voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea nor the trees, till we shall have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. Now notice, on the foreheads is where the seal is to be. Now notice chapter 14 in verse 1 here. And I saw with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his father written on their foreheads. I think that identifies them. They were sealed on their foreheads in chapter 7. They have written on their foreheads the name of the Father and of the Son in chapter 14. So now, this identifies them as the same 144,000. Well, now, who are they? I mentioned to and pointed out when we went over that a number of weeks ago that these constitute the church on earth at any time, the full and complete number at that time or at this time or any other time. 12 times 12 times 10 times 10 and times 10 gives you the 144,000. That is the number to the religious number to the highest extent here. Right, now, I know I'm right first. Because now notice as we go on here in this, I feel confident that I am. And I heard a voice from heaven, as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder. The voice which I heard was as the voice of harpers harping with their hearts. Now here is a voice that he hears from heaven. I said 144,000 are those on earth. Now who's singing this song? Now notice here he says, and they sing as it were a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. So this song is not being sung by the 144,000. They're learning. It's the song that is sung in heaven before the throne and before the elders and the living creatures and the angels there. So now what is that song? I think it's the song of the 5th chapter, verses 9 and 10, where here the 24 elders and the four living creatures sing a new song, saying, worthy art thou to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and is purchased unto God with thy blood men of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. And he says, and they reign upon the earth. Right? I made it similar to a kingdom and priests, and they reign upon the earth. So here is a new song sung by the 24 elders and the four living creatures. When I notice that these are mentioned back here, that they sing as it were a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders, and no man could learn the song, now note, save the 144,000, even they that have been purchased out of the earth. Well, those in the 5th chapter, verses 9 and 10, were purchased out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. Well, that would be out of the earth. They were made a kingdom and priests unto God, and they reign upon the earth. Right? So they're reigning with Christ now. They're with Christ, and as Paul said in Ephesians 2 and verse 4 to 6 there, that he made us alive, raised us up, and made us to sit with him in heavenly places. And in Romans 5 and verse 17, they that have received the abundance of grace and of faith and belief there, he says, and they reign in life through the One. So here they reign in life, that's now. They reign upon the earth, that's here. Right? And they're learning this new song here. That's the song of redemption. Well, that's the song that we're learning. We're learning that song. And so the point is here, that here was a song that was being sung in heaven for the angel or who sang it before these individuals. But now, and no man could learn the song save the 144,000. So the only one that can learn this song, this new song, are those individuals who have been purchased by blood and so on. There. Now notice who they are. We're not left to wonder who the 144,000 are. It kind of amazes me after I've been studying Revelation for some time that so many have missed the point as to who they are. The JWs, I think, make this a special group in heaven apart from all others. And others think it's a special group in heaven. It isn't. It's those on earth. Now notice who they are here. For he goes on to say, even that, first of all, the 144,000, even they that have been purchased out of the earth. Right? Now that's the kingdom and priests of the fifth chapter of that new song there. They've been purchased out of the earth, purchased from among every tribe and tongue and people and nation. They were made to be a kingdom and priests, and they reign upon the earth. So we've been purchased out of the earth. Now the earth here symbolizes the earth dwellers. Now here your earth dwellers here. Now second, these are they that were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. That means spiritual virgins. They haven't been defiled by idolatry. Now remember that John warned in the first John against idols and yielding to idols there. Well now these are spiritual virgins who have not committed spiritual adultery or fornication here. Were the idols in idolatry. Now back in the Old Testament, throughout the Old Testament, the unfaithfulness of the Jews were likened unto whoredom. Now that word, I believe, occurs 9 times in the book of Hosea, who says, my people have committed great whoredom in departing from God. They had committed whoredom with their stocks and their bonds, that is, those things that they had set up there, their wood and their stone images there. So it was a spiritual whoredom that they had committed. Now these are spiritual virgins. They keep themselves free from the one that came up out of the earth back there in the 13th chapter. They've kept themselves free from this idolatry here of the worshiping the emperor or any other idol that man may be set up. So keep yourself free from idols, John says. All right, now notice the second. These are they that were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. Now these are they that follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. Right? So we follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. Now that's this group on earth that's following the Lamb. We've come unto Mount Zion. We've come unto the New Jerusalem, the city of the living God, unto the general assembly, the church of the firstborn who enrolled in heaven, to God the judge of all, and unto Jesus the mediator of a new covenant. And the blood of sprinkling is speaking better than that of Abel. That's what we've come to, don't you see? Now then, we follow the Lamb whithersoever he goes, wherever he leads. Like Jesus said, follow me, you remember? Any man would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Right now, these that deny themselves, take up the cross and follow him, these are the 144,000 that he's talking about here. Clear, I think, as it could be when you look at it in the light of other passages. Now notice further. Now here's the fourth thing. These were purchased from among men, be the first fruits unto God and unto the Lamb. Now there will be others to follow. But these that were with him at that time, following him, and were fighting this great battle against these great forces trying to destroy it, these individually, says here, were purchased from among men to be the first fruits. Now Jeremiah, in chapter 2, and I believe it's verse 3, he speaks of these first fruits as holiness unto the Lord. So the first fruits, and James speaks of that in James 1, a kind of first fruits unto the Lord. So here then, these early Christians were the first fruits of the harvest that was to continue. And that harvest is mentioned in a later passage in this chapter. Now notice further, fifth now, and in their mouth was found no lie. They are without blemish. Right? Now that is none of the devil's lies. Now we pointed out back in the 12th chapter that when the devil pursued the woman, he emitted out of his mouth a river there of water, and the earth swallowed up the river. Right? So the earth dwellers accepted the lies and the falsehoods of Satan. Now that this beast that came up out of the earth, that beast symbolized paganism, a false religion, which spoke with had two horns, but spake with the voice of the dragon. What is the voice of the dragon? John 6 and verse 44. You're of your father, 8 rather, 8:44. You're of your father the devil, and the lust of your father is your will to do. He was a murderer from the beginning, speaketh not the truth. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own. He is a lie and the father thereof. So anything that comes out of the mouth of the devil is a lie. It's a falsehood. So here is false religion, or false accusation, or these things here. That was John 8:44, if you're looking for it. And the lie comes out of from him. Right? So now these, in the mouth of these, is no lie. They are not listening to the falsehoods and the false teaching of the devil. I pointed out in my lesson this morning that here are trials and temptations that come to us. Temptation of the lust of the flesh, temptations also through false religion, and temptations through yielding to force that might force an individual to do what is wrong. Right? Now here is your 144,000. They are those that follow the Lamb. They're with him now. We've come to Mount Zion. We're on earth here. And that's who the 144,000 are. I think there can be no mistake on that. That they're looking at it, what he says about them, what you have here, they're learning the song here. They purchased out of the earth, out of every tribe, tongue, people, and nation, and so on. They come from among the earth dwellers, but they're redeemed by the blood of Christ. Now then, they were purchased out of the earth. Now they follow him whithersoever he goeth. Now that's God's militant army with which he's fighting the force fighting against the force of Satan today. He's fighting and he's depending on us. Jesus Christ, our leader, as we follow him and fight this battle, he depends on us, and nobody else he can depend on. I told you a little story a few months ago somewhere that I heard many, many years ago and read it recently that brought it back to my attention, that when Jesus went back to heaven, the archangel asked him what he had done and told him about it. He said, well, you must have suffered heavily. He did. Well, he said, what provision did you make to carry on your work that cost you so much? He said, I left it in the hands of 12 men to carry it out. Well, he said, now then, and what were they to do? They then were to pass it on unto others. Well, what provision did you make if those that the apostles passed it on to, don't do that? He said, I made no further provision than that. And that's right. He sent the 12 out. Teach them to observe all that I've taught you, said unto you. Now, if we fail, the whole thing fails. And so here's 144,000, God's militant army here on earth at any and all times. The full, complete number now, as it was a full and complete number at that time. How many? I don't know. It's a figurative number there, of fullness and completeness. All right? That's the first part of this vision. Now, I know it's the second. And I saw another angel. Now, it doesn't look to one before. It looks to these two that are to follow down here. I saw another angel flying in mid-heaven, having eternal good tidings to proclaim unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and tribe and tongue and people. See, that identifies your tongue and nation, all that, with them that dwell on the earth. So as you have back in the fifth chapter, those from every tribe and nation have in this chapter, those out of the earth there. See, same number, same group, I mean. So out of it, now here's an angel having eternal good tidings. Well, the Mormons make this, of course, the Book of Mormon and the New Revelation to Joseph Smith. Couldn't be so. Jesus, what is this gospel? Dwell on the earth having everlasting or eternal good tidings, which is a gospel, an eternal gospel, to proclaim unto them that dwell on the earth. Now, the angel is simply symbolic. Here's a symbolic picture. Notice further here, this angel flying in mid-heaven where it could be seen and heard. It simply symbolizes the gospel that was to be preached by those that come to individuals with that to proclaim unto them the eternal good tidings there to them that dwell on the earth and to every nation and so on. And he saith with a great voice, and he saith with a great voice, fear God and give him glory. For the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of water. Now what is this gospel? Mark 16, go preach the gospel to the whole creation. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. Galatians 1, which we preached on a few months ago, beginning with verse 6, I marvel that you are so quickly removing from him that called you by the grace of Christ unto a different gospel, which is not another gospel. Only there are some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we are an angel from heaven, should preach unto you any gospel other than that which we preach unto you, let him be anathema. And again I say, let him be accursed, let him be devoted to destruction. And again I say, as I've already said, and if any man cometh unto you any gospel other than that which we preached unto you, let him be anathema. So this angel here, this is not another gospel, is not the gospel of Mormonism, not the gospel of any other religion, it's not a new gospel, it's simply a symbolic picture of God's desire and declaration here that the gospel be preached to all the earth, and in the preaching of that gospel, that men should do what? That men should fear God, reverence God, respect God, bow unto God, acknowledge him, obey him. That's the whole point there of fearing God. And second, and give him glory. Now then, for the hour of his judgment is come. Now third, and worship him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of water. Worship him, rather, the creator, rather than the creature. So the whole point of that is that there's a symbolic picture of here now, of the 144,000 that have been purchased out of the earth. Now then, God pictures here the preaching of the gospel to all the rest of the earth, with a call up to them to fear God, and not only to fear God, here he says here, fear God and give him glory and worship him, and not the creature. Not the idol, not the creature, not man, not the emperor of Rome, but worship God. So I think that's simply a summary of the whole charge of preaching the gospel here to all the world, calling upon them to fear God, to worship him, to do his will, and these things. Now, second, that call to worship is, and for he said his judgment's at hand. Right now, notice further. Now, the next one is a warning of judgment, and another angel, a second. That's why I said this up here, another angel, simply identifies him as one of the same kind that you have in the second and third angel. So here now, a third angel followed them, saying, with a great voice. No, let me get back to verse 8. A second followed, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the great, that hath made all the nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of a fornication. But Babylon, who is Babylon? Well, we'll learn that in the 17th chapter. That Babylon here is Rome. Now he says it's fallen. Well, had it actually fallen? No. No, it hadn't fallen. You have that idea over and over in the Old Testament. Now when God declares a thing, it may be 100 years down the road, but he may declare it as having been already done, because when God determines a thing, it's just as surely to be done as though it had already been done. Now, this is the first time Babylon is introduced to us in Revelation. Fallen, fallen is Babylon, the great. And that word great is associated with it quite often. So I think that it will learn from the 17th chapter that Babylon is the city of Rome that sat upon or ruled over the empire. So now then, fallen, fallen is Babylon. Now, this Roman empire that you may fear here that has all of its great power, symbolized by the beast out of the sea here, that's going to fall. That's going down. Now, you may get killed before then, but it's destined to fall. Right? So notice now what he says then about that. With the great that had made all the nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of a fornication, that is, the fornication they commit with her, sealed their doom. It's the wine of the wrath that she brings about upon them. Now notice the third one. And another angel, a third, followed them, saying with a great voice, if any man worshipeth the beast, and that goes back up here, if any man worshipeth the beast and his image and receiveth a mark on his forehead upon his hand, he also shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. Now the also looks back to what? Back up here to Babylon. Babylon is going to drink of this wrath. Now if any man worships the beast in his image, that would be the empire or the emperor. The image there, the paganism, worship political power of Rome, rather serve it than to serve God. Now, what you're going to do is, you'll save your life for a little while, but you're destined to eternal destruction. On the other hand, you may have your life snuffed out by the emperor, the empire, but you prolong it for eternity. Now, that's a decision that every person has to make. Am I going to serve the devil now and enjoy some of these things they call the pleasure life now, spend eternity in hell in response to it? Or am I going to deny all that and necessarily be put to death now and live eternally? This is the point that he's making in this right here. Now notice further. And he that receiveth the mark on his forehead, we talked about that last Sunday night in the 12th and 13th chapter, he also shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is prepared unmixed in the cup of his anger. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of that torment goeth up forever and ever, and have no rest day and night, they that worship the beast and his image, and whoso receiveth the mark of his name. Now, notice here's day and night. We had the same thing back in the 7th chapter, and I think it's about verse 15. Therefore are they, now here are the ones that come out of the great tribulation. And he says, therefore are they before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. Now here's one group that's serving God day and night. Here's another group over here tormented day and night. Well, now where's the day? The day is in heaven. Where's the night? That's in hell, the outer darkness there. All right, your night continues as long as your day as long as the night. And so here then, day and night for one, day and night for the other. The one's an eternal day and the other's an eternal night. So the eternal night's going to last as long as the eternal day, won't it? I think if you figure two and two make four, why? And I think you do. Well, that's what you've got here. But now let's look on now a little bit further than this. Now the smoke of that torment goeth up forever and ever. And whoso receiveth the mark. Now here's the patience, the steadfastness of the saints. They that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Now what is my patience or steadfast? My steadfastness is in keeping the commandments of God and of Jesus Christ. Not yielding to Rome's power. Not yielding to Rome's pagan religion. Not yielding to any of that, but dying if necessary. And that comes in the next statement here. Now notice the next statement. And I heard a voice from heaven. Now this is not an angel here, it's a voice from heaven. I don't know if it's God or Christ or what it is. I heard a voice from heaven. Right, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, for their works follow with them. Right, now notice the contrast. Now this passage, you've heard it quoted many times at funerals and used that, and that's fine. It worked in it. But the point is, here is a contrast. There's a contrast between those individuals, blessed are they that die in the Lord. Those that went ahead and took death now, shortening their life here, but prolonging it in eternity. As over against those individuals that yielded to Satan, they preserved their life here for a little while, but when the end comes, they're tormented forever there. So I think that's the contrast that John is making here in this. Here's the three angels here that spoke. Now here's a voice that warned against serving the empire or the beast, the dragon here, and his helpers there. All right? So now you have, that's the second part of this chapter. First, the Lamb and the 144,000, who they are, and they follow him. Second, here's the call of the gospel to the world to repent, to fear God, and to serve him, and to worship him, and all of that, and because Babylon's going to fall, your pagan power and your pagan empire is going to collapse, it's going down, but God is eternal. Now then, here then are those that are before the throne praising and worshiping God day and night. Now here are these, the smoke of their torment goes up day and night. So one is going along with the other. Now let us note the third part of this chapter. In the third part of the chapter, you have, first of all, a scene here of a white cloud and one likened to the Son of Man on it. I think, well, I'll tell you what I think it is in a moment. And I saw and behold a white cloud, and on the cloud I saw one sitting like unto a Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. Now remember back in the 6th chapter, the rider of the white horse had a golden crown, but there he had a bow, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. What? Now, I think that was a picture of Christ in the gospel, going forth to conquer the souls of men and bring them under subjection to himself. Now, what do you have here? I think here you have him now as he gathers these into his garner. As a harvest, ripe unto harvest, you remember all of that. And the word sickle occurs only one other time in the New Testament, but seven times in this verses 14 down through verse 20. It occurs seven times here. Now let me go back to Mark, the fourth chapter, and note the use of the word sickle there that may help us in it. Turn with us to the fourth chapter, and I think it's about verse 29, if I remember correctly. Mark 4 and 29, Jesus is using a parable here, but he's teaching that which we are talking about in this matter. All right, now in this chapter, and Mark 4, I said 29, that's right. Begin with verse 26. And he said, so is the kingdom of God, as if a man should cast seed upon the earth, and should sleep and rise night and day, and the seed should spring up and grow, he knoweth not how. The earth beareth fruit of herself, first the blade, then the ear, then the full grown of the grain in the ear. Now that's the development of the kingdom, that's like that. Small beginning, but after a while it matures. But when the fruit is ripe, straightway he putteth forth the sickle, because the harvest is come. Right? That is, he is gathering his own. And I don't think that's talking about the final judgment. I think it's talking about God, Christ gathering into his garner now. That ripened grain, as we mature, as we ripen. After a while, then we're ready. Then comes the sickle, and he gathers us into his garner. I mentioned that in another place, you remember. Now, my interpretation of this, I think, fits into Jesus' parable here of the kingdom of heaven, like the little grain is planted and comes up the grain, and after a while the stuff, then finally the ripe grain, then the sickle gathers the grain. All right? And I notice, let's go back and look at that again. Now, here's a white cloud. Now, ordinarily, a cloud symbolizes judgment. Well, it could here. His judgment is to when it's ripe and when it's ready to gather into his garner, unto himself. Back in the Old Testament, nearly always the cloud was a symbol of judgment. Isaiah, the 19th chapter and verse 1, Jehovah cometh against Egypt, riding upon a swift cloud. That's a swift cloud. You have a dark cloud, a swift cloud. So far as I recall, this is the only time you have the white cloud. I don't recall another instance of the white cloud than this one here. Right? And on the cloud I saw one sitting, like unto a son of man, I noticed having on his head a golden crown. Now that's the Stephanos, that's the crown of victory. That's the one that in the sixth chapter he was wearing. That's the one he wears except over in the 19th chapter of Revelation. And in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out. Now this will be the fourth angel here that we've had. But Christ is never symbolized as an angel. Christ is never in this book of Revelation symbolized as an angel. The angels are servants, ministering servants, rendering service for the sake of them that are heirs of salvation. Jesus Christ is the king on the throne. He's the leader in the battle, the leader in the war. He's never an angel in the book of Revelation. So any time a fellow is interpreting something here, an angel being Jesus Christ, you better look at it a second time. But I don't think it'll be so. I don't think you'll ever find Christ symbolized as an angel. He's always the king, the ruler, and so on. Right? And another angel came out from the temple crying with a great voice to him that sat on the cloud, send forth thy sickle, and reap, for the hour to reap is come, and the harvest of the earth is ripe. Remember, when it was ripe, then it was gathered. And he that sat on the cloud cast his sickle upon the earth, and the earth was reaped. Now, whether that's the final harvest, I think it's the harvest that's going on now. I think it's been going on that as the grain is ripened, there's the preaching of the gospel, there's the kingdom of God, and as the grain is ripened, then the Lord gathers it unto himself. I think now this is a symbol of Christ himself, who went forth preaching the gospel conquering and to conquer. Now here he is as he reaps into his garner that which is his. This is the work of Christ. Now the next is an angel. Now notice the difference in the two. And another angel, now this is the fifth angel we've had, and another angel came, that's not the Christ this time, came out from the temple which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar. That'll be about the sixth one I think we've had. He that hath power over fire, And he called with a great voice to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, Send forth thy sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel cast his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vintage of the earth, and cast it into the winepress, the great winepress of the wrath of God. The winepress was trodden without the city, and there came out blood from the winepress, even under the bridles of the horses, as far as 1,600 furlongs, which are 200 miles. Now that would be impossible for these people to make everything in that Revelation literal. Or they say, we take it literally. Will you take this one literally also? 200 miles, that would be from way down here in Negev somewhere south of the Dead Sea, clear on up, it's only about 100 miles. I don't know where you'd end up there. Yeah, 200 miles here. Not only that, talking about the horses' bridles, why, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea was 1,290 feet below sea level. Then it was 1,300, about 1,290 or 1,300 feet deep at the deepest place. But at any rate, it's 1,200 and something feet below sea level. Well, I'd take a pretty big horse just to cut through his bridle and wade through that, wouldn't it? But at any rate, it isn't literal. It's a symbolic picture of the terribleness of the judgment of God against the wicked here. Now, I think Christ gathers here in time. I think these are judgments in time. Now, let me just notice about this wine press back in Isaiah, the 63rd chapter. Don't want to turn to that with me here. When Isaiah saw one coming here, and he asked him who it was and where he's been, 63rd chapter, where, who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is generous, a glorious in his apparel, marching in the greatness of his strength. And God replies, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Now the prophet responds, Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine vat? God's response, I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the peoples there was no man with me. Yea, I trod them in mine anger, and trampled them in my wrath, and the lifeblood is sprinkled upon my garments. And I have stained all my raiment, for the day of vengeance had come. Now then, as you look at the last chapter, the 19th chapter, rather, of the book of Revelation, now notice what you have here. Here's a picture of Christ now, as he brings the Roman Empire to an end, as here he is treading the winepress alone here. Now notice here, I've got to try to read all of it. Just drop down here to verse 15. And out of his mouth proceeded a sharp sword, and with it he should smite the nations, should rule them with a rod of iron, and he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness of the wrath of God the Almighty. Hath on his garment and on his thigh name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now back up there a little earlier, you find him there, he's arrayed in verse 13, he's arrayed in a garment sprinkled with blood. So the garment sprinkled in blood was sprinkled with the blood of the grapes, as it were, treading the winepress, but he's treading the winepress and the blood of those that were destroyed, splashed up on it there in that symbolic picture. So what do we have here then? We have, first of all, a symbolic picture of the Lamb and the 144,000 upon earth here as they're carrying out the purpose and mission of God. You have the warning now under the world of the wicked here, the ungodly, through the gospel, to worship God, to serve God, and to fear God. Fear God, serve God, and worship God, those things there. And here's a warning to them of what's going to happen, that those that do not hear judgment, the judgment of God, will bring about treading of these individuals, and their blood there will cover this great area, the judgment that God will render upon them. Right? But now the third picture then is that now of Christ gathering into his garner those that are his as they ripen. And here now is an angel, that's a messenger. So God always uses messengers to carry out the judgment. So here is a messenger then that warns of the coming judgment against the wicked. One of them has a sickle to gather the ripe grain. The other has a sickle to gather the grape and put them in the wine vat and tread them here on their blood to cover this great territory. Now, these are very graphic pictures. They're pictures that are teaching us something. They're trying to teach us who are those on earth that God depending on, who are God's helpers, the victorious Lamb and the faithful followers and his righteous judgments. These are his helpers. Now, those of the devil are misused political power, corrupted religion, and seductive lust that appear to individuals. I can't think of any other way the devil's operating, can you? You try to think of another way the devil's operating through the lust of the flesh, eye, and pride of life, false religion, and power that seeks to force you to do something against your will. Can you think of another way that he could be doing it? I think anything you think of coming to one of these three. Now, how's God operating? He's operating through Jesus Christ. He's operating the victorious Christ, those that follow him, who are proclaiming the gospel, fighting the battle, and then his righteous judgment. He's come. I can't think of any other way he operates. So in this symbolic picture, you have then this great conflict. And so 12, 13, and 14 constitute a unit. These three chapters are a unit, and I think an understanding of them is a key to the understanding of the whole book. Though the first 11 chapters did not introduce these necessarily, but dealt with principles from the 12th to the 22nd, you're dealing with a conflict that went on at that time, which is a conflict that will continue to the end of time. So, maybe this will help us to a better understanding of this great and wonderful book. All right, so let's stand together while we sing the song that's been selected.